Hello, friends. Welcome to Little Bit Weebish. This is the podcast where I, Megan Cardenas, chat with my friends about the anime I love episode by episode. And of course, I am joined with Taylor Lampola again. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm so excited to be back. It's so hard to believe we're coming up to the end of season one. It's been such a journey.
I know. I am shocked. Look at us. I feel like we got through it and it's been amazing. I just want to give a quick shout out to my friend Boone because he actually listens to this podcast. He has since the beginning, and he always tells me his thoughts on the episodes after every episode launch, basically. And he basically said that the gold star and demerit system we're giving out is giving him elementary school flashbacks.
So
I just want to tell everyone, I hope you had an amazing elementary school experience, and that if you are getting flashbacks, it is a welcomed experience.
It's a good flashback. Crossing my fingers.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, but it cracked me up. So thanks for that, Boone. I appreciate it. But everyone, today we will be covering episodes 17 through 20. So be sure to have watched that. Otherwise, we will obviously be spoiling a lot today. And so, yeah, let's dive right into episode 17. The title is The Curse of Immortality. So we learn about a god named Satun, who once ruled as the king of the underworld, and he was doomed to extinction, so he sought how to avoid his fate by researching immortality at the cost of his subjects' lives, and he believed that he could attain this by human offspring, and took a human wife who bore him three sons, who were Dessa, the superhuman endowed with power like his father's, Despa, who was entirely human with only a hint of supernatural ability, and Oaken, who had great physical prowess but had no trace of Satun's godly nature. So obviously, these are the three brothers that we have come to know. And in time, these three princes overthrew and slayed their father, and the kingdom of the underworld finally knew peace under the new rule of King Dessa. But then the brothers discovered that the immortality their father had long sought manifested in Oaken at the age of 25. Oaken begged, "I don't want this. You can't let it take away who I am, brother. You have to help me." But as time passed, Dessa could not help his brother, and this ultimately got him locked in a dungeon as a criminal.
Man, you know, this really makes me feel bad for Oaken.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he knew what would happen as soon as he learned he was immortal. And I don't know, I wonder if there's any fragment of the old Oaken inside that goopy, gross, immortal body that he had.
I know, I hope there is a fragment, but like, yeah, we finally get Oaken's tragic backstory. And, you know, for him, it's like, it really was true where Miranjo said that basically if you're immortal, like you lose your soul, you lose the things that mm-hmm. make you compassionate and empathetic and kind, you know, you lose all of that. And so it really does break my heart that Oaken really did embody those things. But as soon as he became immortal, he knew that he was going to change forever.
Yeah.
Now, in the present, Boji and Kage discussed who actually won their race. Kage fully believes it was he who won the race and told his friend that there's always room for improvement. Bochy quickly makes a mocking face, which was adorable, and challenges him to yet another race. The two spot Appis collapsed on the ground, and Kage remembers him from when he stopped the fight between Bochy and Appis. He was alive and needs Hilling's help. Which always shocks me, because I'm like, whoa, yeah, they didn't, like, get all of this Appis action. They were, that was the last time they saw him. Crazy.
Right.
There's a lot of that, I realize, as, like, the worlds are now converging between the next few episodes. I'm like, whoa, how do they not? Oh, yeah, they've been gone.
Right. You know? Like, us as the audience, we know, we have that knowledge, but these characters haven't learned that yet.
Exactly. And it just, like, I had to keep reminding myself. Now, Miranjo is carried by Zoku, Red and Black, and he calls upon Oken, and Miranjo calls upon Oken, who obeys while at the village. He freezes the captain and Despa with his Shirasampe power and makes his way to the castle. Appis wakes up to Bochy and Kage attempting to drag him. They ask what's going on. Appis tells the prince to run. It's not safe. Everything is going to accordingly to Lady Miranjo's plan to kill Hilling and destroy the kingdom of Boss. He also told him that Boss has now returned to the life, returned to life in the body of Dida. Bochy and Kage are shocked. But
there's the perfect example.
Exactly.
They didn't realize that. Exactly. We're like, yeah, no, we know that, but they didn't.
Right. Like, literally, brand new information. They are shocked. A lot of people are just going to be shocked the next few episodes.
Yeah.
But Boss, he did this so he could fulfill Lady Miranjo's dream to sit at his side as she once did, unburdened by kingship and family. And I just have to add this. I'm sorry. Excuse me. It seems as though Boss agreed to fulfill her dream. And, like, we understand she is doing everything to support his dream. And so, one, this sounds like a whole level of toxic codependency. Like, I don't know another label for it. And then, two, this seems... Well, the bigger issue for me is that it sounds like Boss was emotionally cheating on his two wives. Maybe not romantically, because, you know, we have yet to determine that. But definitely emotionally, he was tied to Miranjo more than his wives. You know, to allow her to be involved in their murders, you know, attempted murders for Hilling, to allow himself to live again and live longer by stealing both of his son's strength, power, and body. And I'm like, all of this so that she can be with him again? Like, are you kidding me? I don't get it.
But yeah. I think emotionally cheating is very true, because even when we first met Boji's mother, Sheena, Miranjo was there. Like, he only went to go find her because suddenly he was like, oh, well, I want to be strong. Guess I got to have a kid. So it was always just like a means to an end as opposed to a relationship.
Yes. And I know, I would hope that Boss, like, loved his wives, but it definitely seemed like, first and foremost, his true alliance, his true companion was Miranjo. Seems like that, at least right now. And it makes me mad. I'm like, are you kidding me? Anyway, I digress. I could go on, but let's get back to it. Now, Appis, he cannot oppose Lady Miranjo, even for Bochy. The debt that he owes her is greater than they could understand, and Appis was determined to stop Bochy until he immediately got a sense of Boji's true nature and strength and collapsed in shock. Bochy had changed, literally been to hell and back and trained with Despa. And Apis realized that that meant that Boji had started to believe in himself, which brought confidence and great power. He also added that Boji found someone who helped him believe in himself as well, meaning Kage. And that was a true blessing and something that they both shared. And Apis let the friends go. Now, Boji and Kage discussed their game plan. First, they were going to beat up those criminals, and then Boji will take out his dad and that Maranjo lady. But Boji stops thinking about how happy he was with his father. And Kage tells him that now's not the time to doubt himself. And he tells that, well, and that goes on when Oaken just like runs through the castle. He's already wiped out the captain and his men. Now, Domus and Horuko made it to the portal. Horuko thought it looked like Boji's friend, a black substance stretched with an opening in the center. And Domus confirmed that was the case. The Shadow Clan, a tragic people. Even in death, they're being used. Domus lights the portal. Referring to Kage, Domus tells Horuko that the child was a rare survivor. They were exploited, betrayed, slaughtered, nearly to the last. All that's left of them was their vile reputation, but from what he'd heard, as a people, they were pure of heart. And this just reiterates to the fact that on paper, to me, Kage is the last person who should be Boji's friends in terms of occupation, status, family, and yet he is the perfect friend for Boji, who's overcome so much and is pure of heart despite everything.
Right. I mean, without those experiences, unfortunately, I don't think Kage would have been able to relate to Boji as much. And yes. I don't know. Poor Kage, he's just been through so much, and just to be so strong on the other side of it is amazing. It hurt for me to find out that this portal was essentially one of Kage's kind, the Shadow Clan, and that they were just seen for their shadowy skills and just as a tool to be used. Kind of like I just said earlier about bosses' wives, like they're just right. A tool, a means to an end, instead of seeing them for who they are.
Oh, I love that you tied that in. I agree with that 100%. Yes, agree. Now, in the castle courtyard, Zoku and Lady Maranjo and the other criminals rest. He wants to know what the mirror has planned. Not that he'll hurt her, but if he does, what would happen? Lady Maranjo says he would die. And Zoku giggles and asks who would stop him if he would just smash her. And that's when Oaken appears, and Zoku shrieks, backing away from Lady Maranjo. Boji and Kage catch up and hide to see what the criminals will do. And we learn that Oaken is now Lady Miranjo's servant under her control and commands Oaken to attack the others. Zoku shoves Black into Oaken and runs up the castle wall. Boji rushes to stop Zoku. "Don't think I won't kill a kid," he tells Boji, but panics. As Boji pulls his sword, immense power radiates from him. Zoku realizes this one is also trouble and surrenders to him. He doesn't want to die and begs Boji to not let the other guy kill him. But when Boji gets closer, Zoku grabs him and emits a purple gas from his mouth. Boji, he just coughs and brushes it away. Zoku is shocked that Boji is not dead. But of course, this is because Boji is actually a giant. Now, Boji stands again facing Zoku with his sword drawn, and Oaken now emerges, and Zoku is trapped between the two. He jumps off the wall, and Boji chases after him and slices, knocks Zoku out with the Despa technique. Kage throws him a rope to tie up Zoku and tells the mirror that that's his best friend, Boji. And, you know, he's Kage, and who are you? But Lady Miranjo doesn't answer and instead says, "You're from the Shadow Clan. I can smell the scent of tragedy on you." Kage demands to know what that means. Fair. And Oken drops down to confront Boji and Zoku. Despa and the captain are running to get to Oken, hoping that Boji doesn't attempt to fight his brother. He's surely to be killed in the process. Now Oken challenges Boji, who tries to paralyze the prince, but Boji continues to dodge his attacks. Turns out Oken was throwing tiny rocks, and Boji pierced one straight through. Kage cheered from the sidelines. No one could beat his friend. Lady Miranjo told Kage that he was the source of bringing out Boji's strength. When a person has someone who believes in them completely and unreservedly, it can render them capable of nearly anything, but at other times it renders them vulnerable. Boji and Oken continue to fight, and even Boji pierces through the armor, but nothing happens. Boji's sword touches Oken's as it shatters, but black sludge just emerges and gets the sword back together. And the fighting continues, though Boji is slightly worried. Lady Miranjo, who tells Boji that he should run, but Boji doesn't leave. He's worried now that if he leaves, other people will die trying to fight. So Boji wrestles with the idea that he might have to kill Oken. But the mirror tells Kage that Oken can't be defeated or die. He's immortal. And because of that, Boji makes his way to the castle to rest. But that causes Oken to change and go to Zoku instead. So Boji comes back, puts himself between the two, and Kage begs for the mirror's help, but then realizes he doesn't know who she is. The mirror never told him. "I am Miranjo," and Kage realizes she's the one behind all of this. Oh, the suspense, the plot twists. Now, let's move on to highlights. So I just want to say, I thought the comparison between Apis made between him and Boji gaining confidence and power and having someone who believed in them like Lady Miranjo and Kage, you know, Apis is to Lady Miranjo as Boji is to Kage, you know, a little bit of the word math problems. but that's about as nerdy as I can get.
Elementary school again.
Exactly. But he says it's truly a blessing. And I would agree in the case of Boji and Kage, for sure. But with Apis and how it's led him to compromise his own obligations, his conscience, all those things, I don't think it would be true. Like, do they have similarities? Yes. But I don't think Kage would ever tell Boji, like, let's go kill the people who wronged me and my clan. Let's hurt the people who hurt me because you're my friend. I don't think he'd ever ask that of Boji in a similar way that Lady Miranjo is asking that of Apis.
Oh, I agree. Kage would never. But he just wouldn't. But I do think that it's a very interesting comparison, though, to really show you that even having somebody support you, like Apis did with Miranjo, you can still end up going down the wrong path. Oh, or, yeah. You know, like, that support can end up being more toxic than helpful.
Oh, I love that. That's a very good take on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that until you brought it up. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. Also, I did want to point out that Boji breaking the sword was mm-hmm. his secret special move that Despa had alluded to before. Mm-hmm. When he's like, oh, Boji has this secret move up his sleeve. So that was it. Which would have been fine if Oken's creepy immortality juice didn't immediately fix it. Like, how come it works on his sword? I get it on his body, but how does it work on his sword?
I know, or his armor, like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's because he is, like is with a capital S. He is the Sword King. You know, maybe it's because
it's more of an extension of his body.
I think so. But yeah, dang it. It's like that's when he uses his ultimate move, you know, basically crumbling his opponent's weapon. Yeah. And yet it's like, crap, it didn't work, you know? So, yeah. But Boji, I'm telling you, I actually really enjoyed the fighting moments that came up and that are going to come up, which normally isn't my jam, but they're incredible from here on out. So
yeah, we've got a lot more to come.
I know, and I think that's a wrap. So let's move on to episode 18.
Right. So episode 18 is called Battle with the Gods. So we open with a flashback to when Bebin was confronting Boss in the dungeon. Bebin says all he wants is to get Dida back and for Boss to explain what is going on. Boss laughs and tells Bebin that all the people who have stood by him have been kind-hearted people and that Miranjo is the one in the mirror and she is the person who he holds most dear.
I stand by what I said, emotionally cheating on his wives and his family. I stand by what I said.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. That's exactly how I interpreted that. But before we can hear Boss explain whatever that means, we rejoin Dorsha, Hilling, and a now conscious Apis. Dorsha is disappointed to hear Apis just go on and on about Miranjo again, but Apis claims that he just wanted to relieve Miranjo of her suffering, but everything has gone wrong. Yeah, no kidding. Apis begs Dorsha to save her, but before he can answer, Hilling comes over and heals Apis. "You go save her," she says. Hilling claims she has no idea what's going on, but Anne laughs and says her face is full of confidence, though. Hilling then relents and admits it's because she can sense that Boji will save them all.
Hmm.
And at that moment, Domas and Hokuro emerge around the corner, only to immediately prostrate themselves in front of a very angry Hilling. The two of them apologize and say they will pledge their lives to Boji. Hilling, surprisingly, forgives them and tells them to work hard. So Hokuro and Domas regale Hilling with a tale of how Boji just now saved the kingdom from Dessa, who was coming in to try to take over. The two men, along with Apis, head over to where Boji is to go help him. Hilling also sends Dorsha, promising him that she will be safe here with Anne. Now, Hilling is sure really quick to forgive Domas and Hokuro.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we talked a lot about the idea of forgiveness in the last episode, but in this case, to me, it seemed strategic on Hilling's part because she doesn't know the full picture of what the heck is going on, but she knows she needs their strength for what's to come.
Yes, I agree. She needs allies.
Yeah.
I think that because this is a time of crisis, they will prove their true loyalties once again, and that will be enough for Hilling. So yeah, I think that she does it because she just understands that at least their situation is dire and they need people on their side. Now, I will say, I loved also how proud she was of Boji when she heard that he stood up to Dessa. She was like, really? Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I love Hilling being proud of our sweet Boji. So cute.
Proud mom Hilling.
Exactly.
All right, so now we finally get back to Boss, explaining that he sees Miranjo as a child, a mother, and a teacher to him. He said that when he was younger, he had traveled to a place called the Homa Kingdom to fight mages as he trained to get stronger. At this time, we see that Dida, in the darkness still with young Miranjo, is able to see all of this, to see his father's memories as he's telling them to Bebin. Boss explains that the mages of the Homa Kingdom had powers that matched the gods, and they were the first to stand up to them. And that is where Boss met Miranjo, after he ended up killing her father in a duel. Miranjo's mother still healed Boss, so she had healing powers like healing does. Mm-hmm. And he was amazed at the kindness of her and at everyone in the kingdom. So he stayed there to watch Miranjo grow up and to help the villagers in their fight against the gods. But all of their power was not enough to fight the gods, and the Homa kingdom had to align with another kingdom called the Gyakuza kingdom. Now, I really liked one of the pieces of advice that Miranjo's mother gives her. Mm-hmm. She tells her to be sure to build your own happiness on the happiness of others. I can't say that Miranjo is really following that right now, but it's still a nice sentiment.
Yeah, very good advice for a happy life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, unfortunately, the Gyakuza kingdom were not so welcoming to outsiders, but the Homa kingdom, in their kindness, tried to help anyway by teaching them magic and bringing prosperity to their kingdom. But the Gyakuzans saw their kindness as weakness and took advantage of Miranjo's mother's kindness. The Gyakuzans blamed the Homa kingdom for the atrocities they themselves had committed and ruined their reputation. And then one night, we see a group of the Gyakuzans broke into Miranjo and her mother's house to rob them. They stabbed her mother to death and then head towards Miranjo's room.
I will say that this is kind of a similarity between young Miranjo and Kage, the Homa people and the Shadow Clan. Being persecuted, having their families killed, it does make me feel bad for Miranjo to a degree. It makes me feel bad for young Miranjo, I should say.
Right. She's just a child.
Exactly.
You know, that is something she shouldn't have to go through or witness. So it is, like you said, to a degree. It's like we can now start to see a bigger picture of her.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can kind of see the events that have shaped her.
Right.
So back now to the present. Kage, who has just figured out who the mirror is, he pulls out a knife at Miranjo and she says she can't blame him. Boji, meanwhile, is panting with exhaustion from his fight with Oken. He ties his sword to his hand to keep fighting and even tries to push Kage away when he tries to step in and help. And right as it looks like Oken will win, a spear falls from the sky and it's hit with lightning, causing the immortal prince to back off. The captain of the order and Despa come running in. Despa tells Boji that he has fought well and he is so proud of them. Miranjo then ribs them by saying they're acting as if they've already won. So Kage, he grabs the mirror and threatens to smash it, but Miranjo does not protest. "What the hell are you anyway?" Kage asks. Despa and the captain acknowledge the strangeness of Miranjo, but they put her on the back burner for now. They have a much more pressing issue, and that's Oken. Despa turns the sky a dark, ominous shade of black to assist the other two in the fight against Oken with his lightning. But Oken outwits them by conducting that lightning away from his vital organs, and that was their trump card, and he's overcome it. So both Boji's special move, Dessa's special move, it's not having any effect. Despa now worries that they're all about to be killed. Oken manages to stab the captain, even through his armor. Despa, seeing that, calls out that he is Oken's target now. We do get a quick glimpse here at Despa's past and his own difficulty in overcoming his physical weakness, where he realized that his strength was in his intuition and analytic mind. So Despa uses that to dodge Oken's first blow and grabs hold of both of his arms. Then Despa has a vision of his brother Oken, not clad in any armor, and he tells him that it is not time to save him yet. He has many others to save first. But while Despa is seemingly distracted, Oken stabs Despa in the chest.
I know that Despa gets stabbed but still. I love, though, how Ranking of Kings shows that there are many sides to strength and what it means. Like, yes, it can be physical. Yes, it can involve height and stature and strength, you know, and that can be a part of it. But so is your mind and your analytic abilities. And maybe the way you were taught doesn't show your true genius. And you might need to find another way, like Boji did when he went from Domus to Despa. I just really enjoy that the show portrays, like, someone's strength and genius in different ways, that there are different options for people.
You know? Right. There's many facets to strength, and it's not just having giant muscles.
Exactly. Exactly.
So Kage, seeing Despa get stabbed, he cries out and Boji rushes to his master's side. Boji is angry now. He lets out a flurry of attacks at Oken's mask and he shatters it in the process. Kage tells Boji that Despa is still alive, but Miranjo tells Kage that that is Oken's technique, to miss the vital points to have his victims die slowly. And as she explains that, Oken's immortal goo heals all of his wounds and his armor and his sword. Boji stands to fight again, but his reactions now aren't as fast, and Kage worries that Boji is done for. Kage just, he wants to know what he can do to help. Oken, then seeing Kage, approaches him, but Boji leaps onto Oken's helmet, desperate to protect his friend. At that time, Oken stabs Boji in the leg and throws him off his back. Oken stands up, ready to make the killing blow on Boji, but Kage, screaming as loud as he can, hurries over to Boji. Kage grows to be nearly three times the size of Oken, and looming over him, he consumes Oken inside of him.
Oh, man. When that ending happened, I was, well, first off, them both screaming out of fear for each other ripped out my heart. But when Kage grows, it was like, wow, you can really see the power of the Shadow Clan in that moment. Like, and how fearsome and scary they can be. But Boji is here doing it out of love.
Right. And, you know, I wonder if Kage knew he could do that, if he knew he had that power, or if it just kind of manifested in this moment of need, in this, you know, intense moment. I don't know. You know, they never really established that. But to me, it seems like Kage may have not known he could do this.
Right. Huh. I don't think that he could, because, I mean, just from when he lost his mom at such a young age, I don't think he knew up until that point. I think it just was one of those things where he manifested it in himself.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh,
very interesting.
All right. So that lovely cliffhanger was the end of episode 18. So let's talk about a couple highlights here. You know, we kind of talked about it, but we finally are getting a clearer picture of Miranjo's past. You know, it had been alluded to before, but now we've finally gotten to see how and when she met Boss when she was so young. And we've talked about how getting this helps us see a more rounded picture of the quote-unquote villains, and it helps provide a bit of empathy, you know, like we'd mentioned earlier. And I'm not saying that Miranjo's past is not horrific, and I feel terrible for her, but I still don't really see how that justifies what she's done and what she's currently doing.
I agree. Not romantic. And obviously, we understand that from a young age, horrific things happened in her life. So I understand that part. I'm definitely with you there. But I just want to know, where was that line, you know, when you have gone too far? Like, I understand the beginning. I don't know how it correlates with the end or where the path happened or the line crossed.
Right.
Because, you know, murdering Boji's mom, that's a big escalation. So yeah. I'm not giving any passes to Miranjo or Boss yet. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, you're right. We haven't seen yet that point where, well, I mean, I guess you're saying like when she killed Boji's mom, but like what led her up to that point? We never really got that explanation. So we're seeing the seeds of the past, but we still have this huge disconnect between young Miranjo and current Miranjo.
Exactly, exactly.
So hopefully we'll get a little bit more clarity here.
Hopefully.
But yeah, I think that wraps up episode 18.
All right, let's go. So now we're at episode 18, or 19, numbers, and the title is The Last Bastion. Now Kage, he swallows Oken to protect Boji, but Oken cuts him straight through. We then get a flashback of the people complaining about the Homa people, how they were responsible for trampling their rich lands and causing bloodshed. They took their concerns to this god king named Chabishin. Chabishin? Did I say that right?
Yeah, I think it's a weird one.
Yeah, it's throwing me off here. And he doesn't get his name, like, hardly mentioned at all. But it's Chabishin.
Right.
Yep. And they agree to offer them help. But when they leave, Chabishin tells his knights that they would leave the Gyakuza kingdom alone for now until he could make them his slaves. And as for the Homa kingdom, he would also leave them alone because their kingdom was finished. But Chabishin did realize that the gods needed a new way of ruling over humanity. With humanity's knowledge growing by leaps and bounds, the power that they were wielding was fading away. Interesting. Now, in the dungeon, Boss reflected and shared on his life that he had with young Miranjo. When he saw her, she was chained to a pole by the neck. Her arms were cut off, and she looked dead. Boss asked the smiling villagers, "You would do something this vile and claim it's justified?" And in his anger, he murders the Gyakuza people. From inside the void, Daida watches his father's memories. And again, I mean, I get it. I also have a strong sense of justice, especially when it comes to children. So I get it, Boss. I still don't know the line where things cross, but I understand this 100%.
Yeah, I think his rage there is justified.
Yes. Now, when it's finished, Boss takes Miranjo and his belongings. Why was that hard? Okay, belongings.
Because we've had so many bizarre names to pronounce.
I know. And then for normal ones, it's like, stumble. Oh, I'm stumbling over the word stumble. Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay.
Deep breath.
Okay, I should have done some, like, mouth exercises to, like, loosen up the tongue here. Jeez, gosh.
Red leather, yellow leather.
Exactly, gosh. Okay, let me start that sentence over. When it's finished, Boss takes Miranjo and his belongings and takes him to the wizard to heal her. And he tells him, fix her. And from then on, Miranjo and Boss were happy together at each other's sides. Bebin now understands why Boss would allow this to happen. Such a gruesome thing could change a person, but Boss disagrees. She was maimed, disfigured, and suffered terribly. But he was the one who kept her from getting better.
You know, I wrote down, why does Boss feel so much guilt over what happened to Miranjo? And you know, it goes back to what you said earlier about the idea of toxic codependency. And I kind of feel like this is where it's kind of starting to come up, because he feels so guilty that he wasn't there to protect her. It's his fault. He needs to fix it at all cost. So I wonder if this is kind of where those seeds start to get sown, of that kind of blind dedication to each other.
Right. Like, I am now solely responsible for her and for her healing and for her protection. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah. I could see that being the start of those seeds for sure. Now, one of Bebin's snakes alerts that Boji needs him. Boss acknowledges that Bebin was partially responsible for Boji's increased strength. Could Boji not win this fight himself? Bebin told Boss no, and he would destroy the mirror if necessary. Boss continued to stay in the cell. Now, Boji drags himself to his fallen friend. Despa and the captain see Oaken raise his sword over Boji and try to stop him, but it's too late. Oaken stabs Boji, and his cries immediately stop. Despa drags himself to his apprentice. The mirror possesses Red and begins to heal Kage and Boji. Despa sees flashes of Miranjo's sad life. Immediately, he and Boji appear in a new place on top of a rock tower. Below, they see Kage jumping for joy. Kage sees his mother on the far shore, and Despa realizes that they're in the realm between life and death, which causes Despa to momentarily panic. He had saved so much that he did not have the chance to spend absurd amounts of wealth. Is fate so cruel?
Okay, among all of the darkness in this episode, I laughed so hard at this point. Yes. I was like, I died after saving all that money? I can't spend it? Oh, Despa, never change.
Right, oh my gosh. Oh, he cracked me up so much. Now below, Kage, he finds a boat, and he starts paddling to his mother. If he makes it to the other side, he'll be dead. So Boji and Despa are trying to get their friend's attention, but it's no use. Kage can't hear them, which means that they aren't actually there in the realm. Rather, they're trapped in someone else's mind, aka the mind of Miranjo through Red. This proves Despa's theory. He's too handsome to die.
Oh, Despa.
Yes, yet again. Now, just before Kage can make it to his mom, a rope stops the boat. Miranjo is holding it. She tells Kage that if he makes it to the other side, he will die. Has he severed all attachments? His mother calls for him, but Kage realizes that he still has Boji on the other side and begins to weep. He realizes that he can't quite return yet. He wants to help Boji. Before he leaves, he asks his mama how he's been. His mother confirms that she's had an enjoyable time with good company, which makes Kage glad to hear it, because he has some things he needs to take care of on the other side. And mama tells her son, right, then you go back and get him done. Kage tells his mother that he'll be right back after he's done, but he might be an old man when he does. Miranjo pulls him back. Oh my gosh. I cried then and I'm crying now. Jeez. Oh my gosh. Yes, it was.
Such a heart-rending moment.
Now, when Kage realizes that Miranjo's voice was the same from the mirror, he doesn't know why she helped him, but Kage thanked her anyway, even if this was kind of her fault. But it's fine. And then he rushes off to be with Boji, and that makes Miranjo blush from the exchange. And in the black void, the doll-like Miranjo begins to glow. She's now transformed into a human body and wakes up. Both she and Daida are shocked. Everything is healed, and Miranjo begins to fade. She's been saved. And thanked him. Daida didn't want to be left alone, but Miranja told him it would be okay. Now, back in the realm, on the side of death, Miranja spots her mother and Boji's mom looking at her. In the real world, Mitsumata is wounded, standing over Boji and the others. Healing has no power left. There's no saving any of them. And Oken's stomach growls, and he approaches Mitsumata and cuts into him and begins to eat Mitsumata. Until Bebin jumps in and slices Oken through. "Keep your damned filthy hands off of him, you cur," he tells Oken, which, for everyone who doesn't know what cur means, it's an aggressive dog or mongrel, or informally and derogatorily, it's a contemptible man. So, accurate, yes. Now, Dorsh, Domas, and Optis and the others make it. The big four are now reunited again. Avengers assemble. Optis notices that Lady Miranjo is not in her mirror. And Hokuro goes to Boji. They don't have long. The healing is again out of power. Now, there is someone who can save them. They just have to get rid of Oken first. Domas approaches Oken. He realizes that Boji probably could beat him. He realizes that Boji could beat him, aka Domas. But it is Domas who must now face Oken. And the big four realize how powerful Oken is, and one by one they each start taking turns attacking. Which I need to say, the whole fighting, in general, very cool. It also is hilarious to me that when Domas like falls for Oken's like, you know, tricks, Bevan's like, "I wanted you to see how powerful Oken was instead of telling you." Like, their banter, I loved it so much.
Yes, I was so excited to be able to see all four of them working together. Really, for the first time.
It felt like they were just in such different parts. That they were just the big dog. And so it's like, oh, yeah, you're the big four. But no, like, they actually are a group that work together. So cool. Now, Dorsh has Oken pinned down.
Yeah.
And Oken remembers his training from Despa and ends up throwing him off. Back on his feet, he turns to his opponents and fights them yet again, taking them all out. He is the Sword King of the Underworld, after all. But they are the Big Four, the last bastion of the kingdom. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I did like how, you know, the episode title is The Last Bastion. And then at the very end, they're like, "We are the last bastion."
They said the
They said the thing. It gave me very much like, "You are now the Fellowship of the Ring."
Yes,
like exactly. The same thing where they kind of announced their title.
I ate it up. Now, let's talk about highlights. Let's have you start us off. You know, what did you think about this episode?
Well, I'm going to go back to the saddest moment of the, sad, happy moment of the episode. But I know it wasn't like a true reunion, but Kage getting to see his mother again, it was just so sweet that, you know, she got to see her son all grown up, and I don't know, it just was such a wonderful moment. And Kage's mother saying that she has no complaints about the afterlife and everyone there is so happy, it's such a beautiful image of the afterlife. I know everyone has their own beliefs and interpretations of the afterlife, but I don't know. I really like this one. It's just so sweet to imagine.
I know.
Everyone's just happy.
I got choked up completely with all of this. I fully subscribe to the belief that there is an afterlife, but I think regardless, I think people can appreciate the thought that there are people who love them on this side of the realm and the one beyond us, you know, people who are cheering us on, loving us, rooting for our success. And I just imagine that after all that time, it will be as beautiful of a reunion as Kage jumping for joy when he saw his mom. Oh my gosh. Okay, gonna cry. All right. Oh, I know, but I know. Let's be honest.
I'm sorry I had to bring it up again.
I was like, this is the epitome of, like, how I feel about Ranking of Kings. It just, like, pulls at your heart in, like, the most bittersweet, beautiful way. So, I loved it, but I think that's right. A wrap, so let's move on to episode 20.
Right. Episode 20 is called Immortal versus Invincible. So we rejoin Miranjo waiting at the river on the boundary between life and death, facing both Boji's mother, Sheena, and her own mother. Boji, observing from above on that rock, he realizes that that's his mother, and so many memories, including her death, they come flooding back. Tears welling in his eyes, he pounds on the invisible barrier that's separating them and cries out. But his mother cannot see nor hear him. Despa recognizes that that must be Boji's mother and Miranjo's mother. And he also recognizes that this meeting is probably not going to be very amicable. Sheena immediately says to drop the niceties. "How dare you kill me?" she says to Miranjo. Miranjo says that the dead cannot cross over the river, so she cannot retaliate. Sheena says she isn't here for violence. Miranjo's mother then asks why she killed Sheena in a sad voice. But Sheena observes that also Miranjo cannot cross the river over to the afterlife due to her deal with the demon for prolonging her life. He will devour her soul instead when she dies. So Sheena asks Miranjo if she plans to continue down this lonely path of hurting people. But also, to Miranjo's surprise, she said she holds no grudge against Miranjo. She knows her son has grown to be strong and has many people protecting him, whereas Miranjo is almost completely alone. Miranjo's mother tells her where she is going will only lead to unhappiness. But possibly, out of sheer delusion, Miranjo says she will be with Boss, and she will be happy. Miranjo emits a stream of green light in her anger, and she transports herself and Boji and Despa and Kage back to the land of the living. And again, this theme of forgiveness pops up. We see that Sheena is holding no ill will towards Miranjo, which even surprises Miranjo. And the fact that she can is because of her faith in Boji.
Oh my gosh. It was that to me.
I just love it.
That moment was so beautiful. But also, I'm like, imagine it either takes amazing strength to forgive someone in that way. Either that or just the afterlife is just so beautiful that you just get the bigger picture. Like, I don't know. But either way, I'm like, this
maybe
theme of forgiveness continues to pop up with different people who have been wronged in some horrible ways. You know, and yeah, I don't know. I can only hope that, you know, when it all is said and done, that people forgive each other as easily as the people do in Ranking of Kings.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. Very interesting, this theme of forgiveness.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So in the black void, before they return to the land of the living, Despa asks Boji if he will be able to kill Miranjo and judge her for killing his mother. Boji implies that he cannot. And Despa smiles, as that's exactly the type of person he thought Boji was. He then shares Miranjo's memories with Boji so he may understand more about her. But Despa laments that nobody can truly save her anymore.
Boji even said, like, he said he could not forget, or he could not kill Miranjo for killing his mom, even before he saw her memories, which is just a level of compassion that many wouldn't understand, and is a reminder for people like me and for people in general that you know, you don't have to know someone's backstory to be empathetic and compassionate. You just need to understand who they are in that moment, right, and just give them grace when grace is due, you know?
Yes, I think that's the perfect way to say that. I agree. So, meanwhile, the Big Four, they're continuing their bloody battle with Oaken. They've temporarily managed to get him restrained and also missing a few limbs. But that is short-lived, as his immortal powers heal him very quickly. Apis, who had been holding back the main body, is stabbed through the chest when Oaken stabs himself and Apis along with him. Before Oaken can finish Apis off, Hokuro shoots an arrow right through Oaken. Our sweet Hokuro is so proud of himself, but his celebration is short-lived, as Oaken comes over and stabs Hokuro in the chest as well. Miranjo, now, is looking out on the scene in front of her from the mirror and wonders now if this is truly what she wanted. And in the darkness, Daida sees a memory of when King Boss died and finally learns that Miranjo, the girl he'd been caring for all this time, was the one who was in the mirror. Now, Despa wakes up from his trip to the boundary of life and death and realizes that his wound is not healed. But to his surprise, Kage is just fine. He recalls someone healing Kage before they were all transported. Despa tells Kage to sneak over to the captain, as he has a technique to stop the bleeding and he is their last hope. Kage realizes it was Miranjo that healed him. But why? Before Kage can get to the captain, Oaken realizes the captain is not dead and stabs him again and starts walking towards Kage. Unsteady on his feet, Boji again gets up to protect his friend. And it looks like Boji is done for until the ground starts shaking and everyone stops to look. Boss has joined the fight. Finally. But instead of attacking Oaken, he uses his giant club and bats Boji away.
Multiple things. One, when Boji got up to save Kage, that was incredible. Like, the strength and love that he has is incredible. Two, when Boss finally comes, right, after literally everyone else has, Kage just goes like, are you the old crackpot who stole his son's body? What's your deal? Like, that just made me laugh because I'm like, exactly. Hell yeah. What is your deal? Oh, I'm so mad.
Kage, yes. Kage is so blunt sometimes. He just says whatever he's thinking with no regards to, like, social cues. But he is. He's saying what everyone's thinking. I love it. So, Kage is furious, and he slithers onto Boss's head and starts punching his face over and over again until Boss throws him off. It would be much less painful for you to all die at once, he says, as he clubs the rest of the men scattered all over the battlefield over to where Boji is, along with Mitsumata, who attempts to attack Boss. Boss informs them that no attack will work on him. Why is Boss turning on all of them? But then, Boss takes a deep breath and emits a great green light from his hands, and he heals all of the wounded, who are now all gathered in one spot. Healing notices the light and runs to see what's going on. Bebin realizes that this was the healing powers that Daida had inherited from Healing. Okay, so among all the darkness of the last few episodes, once everyone is healed, there's this adorable moment where Boji is marching to Kage, chanting his name, and then the two of them and Despa do a little ring around the rosy, and it's so wonderful and pure. And even Domas remarks that he didn't realize that Boji was this energetic.
Oh, it was needed. It was so cute. I was just like, WTF, like, everyone is dying. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Right?
Exactly. This was the palate cleanser. Nobody could get the upper hand
on Oaken. So, yes, exactly. Exactly. We needed some more adorable Boji. So, everyone being healed is wonderful and all, but the threat has still not passed. Oaken is still there. Boss waves them back, indicating that this is his fight. Despa is wary of Boss, though. He's still not convinced that he's truly on their side. The fight begins, and Oaken cannot get a strike in on Boss. His giant's powers, condensed into Dida's small body, have only amplified his toughness. Boss takes his club and essentially breaks Oaken in half. The half that he hit turns into that black goo. Before Oaken can heal, Boss hits him again and again.
Just to
but yet Oaken still
go
heals
back
again.
To Despa a little bit. I thought the advice he gave to Boji was so sweet. Just to reassure him that Boji fought valiantly, but also sometimes the next thing we have to do is just entrust someone else with the task to finish things. I think those are words of wisdom that can apply to real life too. Sometimes we do our best and it's okay for another person to just take the reins.
Yes. Yep. Sometimes our egos want to get in the way. So I understand because I am guilty of that myself. So Boss now laments that there may be no salvation left for Oaken. He hits Oaken over and over, shattering him into pieces. Boss then takes those pieces and compresses them into a ball. That causes Oaken to have difficulty healing himself, which gives Boss an idea. Boss reaches underground and pulls out a giant boulder. He demolishes Oaken, putting all of his pieces into another ball, and then stuffs that ball into the boulder, making it so Oaken cannot escape and heal himself. Oaken makes the most horrible wailing sound as Boss shuts the hole in the boulder. Everyone gathered around has fully seen now that Boss is bad news, but Boji is visibly angry at what's just been done to Oaken. So Boji steals himself to face his father, and the two stare each other down.
What a cliffhanger.
Yep. That's where we're leaving it. All right. So a couple highlights for episode 20. In the previous episode, we got Kage and his mom reuniting. And in this one, Boji got to see his mom. And even though the two couldn't interact, the fact that she was able to recognize Boji's growth just on instinct, it warms my heart.
Right. Like, she either knew all along her son's true potential, or she'd been watching over him. Either thing that you subscribe to, I think is just a beautiful thought that, you know, people on the other side, again, they're cheering for you. They're rooting for your success, and they know that you can do it. It's beautiful.
I agree. All right. I think that's it for episode 20 and for the episode. Our episode.
Yeah. So let's just go to gold star and demerit. So, Taylor, you've got the gold star this week. I've got the demerit. So do you want to just share your gold star?
Sure. So since it is the penultimate episode for us, and we haven't given Kage the gold star yet. Can I give it to him now? I know I said I used my free pass, but Kage in this group of episodes, he was willing to sacrifice himself to protect Boji from Oaken. And you can't really give more than that. So we got to give it to Kage. It's kind of an overall the whole series Kage, but in this group of episodes.
Well, to add to this specifically, he also gave up his immediate happiness of reuniting with his mom to go back to Boji. So, I think that he really does deserve it.
Yes.
Now, here's for my demerit. This may come as no shock, but I have to say that Boss is the worst and he gets the demerit. Like, he literally waited this long to enter the fight. One. Like, literally the end of our coverage. And there were so many people, like, literally on the brink of death who bravely fought Oaken. And then on top of that, he's now going after his own people. And I'm just like, I don't understand. Like, yeah, he healed them with Dida's healing power. But I don't know. He is not being loyal. And I just am, I'm all about loyalty. And Boss, he's only shown that he is loyal to himself and to whatever Miranjo wants. And the only reason why I choose Boss over Miranjo is because this time, this focused more on her upbringing and her backstory rather than her plan. So yeah, it's 100% Boss. He was barely here, but that's because he chose to barely be there.
Yeah.
And there you go.
I agree.
Yep, sticking by it. Now, you guys, that is a wrap. So thank you so much for joining us. We are so happy that you choose to come back to Little Bit Weebish. It is just so great. And if you'd like to support the podcast, the best way to do that is to share the episode with a friend, get them into anime, get them into watching Ranking of Kings. It's a good time. Or to give us a review. Both help us out so much. Now, the exciting thing is that next week we will be covering only three episodes, episodes 21 and 20, or through 23, because we will have wrapped up Ranking of Kings. We will be hitting the season finale. It's going to be awesome. Like, we did it.
We did and it.
I know, we made it. And so for those of you who have been following along, be sure to just like wrap this up and go to the end. We will be having our series finale episode and it will be awesome. Now, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Send us an email at littlebitweebish@gmail.com or a DM on either Instagram or TikTok. Thank you so much and we will see you all again next week.
Bye guys.